Okay, welcome everyone to another episode of Behind the Human. I'm your host, Mark Champagne, and it's my job to unpack the stories and mental fitness practices of people living at the top of their game, personally and professionally. Today we have Steve Cody on the show, who began his career in the music industry as a touring and recording musician. Recently, he retired from the Canadian record industry after 30 years. During his career, he worked at several major record labels, with his most recent position being Vice President Radio Promotion at Warner Music Canada, where he spent 21 years. Decorated with a constellation of Canadian and international industry accolades, Steve's journey shines brightly, marked by enduring connections to globally renowned artists. And now he stands on the brink of a thrilling new chapter ahead in life, personally and professionally. And I just feel so honored, Steve, to be chatting with you at this point in your journey. It's a real honor and privilege. So welcome. Who are you? You know, who is Steve Cody today? What are those characteristics that feel that would describe you well today?
That's a good question. The short answer is retiree.
Yeah. That's the title, though.
That's the title. It's unavoidable that I'm a music person. Mm. I don't know how else to put it. It's just like music has informed my life. Yeah. From my awareness of being a human, yeah, for a bunch of reasons. Yeah. And most of it was professional. I worked professionally in music for a really, really long time.
I did want to ask you about that because, I mean, you've definitely rubbed shoulders with some pretty remarkable humans and just such talented people. I mean, the list is too long, but I pulled some. I mean, you've got the Neil Youngs of the world, Michael Bublé, Nelly Furtado. I'm thinking of someone that is really popping quite recently right now, Lindsay L. I know there's a relationship there as well. But if I, you know, put the names aside, I'd love to know, what role did music play for you growing up? You know, if you go back to your childhood, like where did it all begin for you?
Well, as long as I can remember, music was a big part of our family. My father was a professional drummer.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So as soon as, that was not his day job, but he worked steadily for decades as a touring musician. Not touring a lot, obviously mostly around Atlantic Canada. But he was a drummer, so there were drums in the house. There was a piano in the house. My mother, slightly younger, loved to sing, loved all kinds of different music. So there was always music in our house. My older brother played the drums, but then more so became a trumpet player. My sister was a sax player. My younger brother is also a drummer. Okay. I'm thinking about this when I'm remembering my dad from those days. He's been gone for a long time. Probably for 6 or more decades, someone in my immediate family, beginning with my father, then me and him together, and then my younger brother and me together, and now my younger brother, has worked professionally as a drummer.
Really?
With uninterrupted. My brother still performs, like gets paid to play drums on the regular. Yeah.
So did I miss it? So were you playing the drums as well? Because I know the first band for you was Tequila, right?
Yeah, yeah. So when I was 14, I joined a local band in PEI called Tequila.
Tequila. That's a good name.
Misspelled. And it was T-A-Q-U-I-L-A.
Okay.
Which we had to keep because the agent misspelled it and posters were printed.
No way.
Yeah.
So was that we got a bit of a glimpse of a bit of your career just from the bio, but how did it all happen there? I mean, how long did you play in bands and like, what was that transition into then, you know, into the recording space?
Yeah. So I from as young as I can remember, I had a drum kit at my disposal mostly. So I played a lot. And would do just silly little things like the school variety show, things like that. But didn't really, I'm trying to remember how I would have been asked to audition for that band. Because it was an existing band. All of the members were older than me. And I was brought in as a 14-year-old and got the gig. Wow. Which immediately got me a nickname, The Kid.
Okay.
But it was really great because the band had already sort of had a bit of success locally, right? So beginning at age 14, almost every weekend, most weekends, and every summer of school, I was working. I was touring around mostly Atlantic Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so and now then, I see, like, this is where you're right. I mean, it's hard. There's no way you can't answer a question around who are you with some sort of music link. I mean, it's... Yeah, literally since the beginning of your DNA.
Yeah, it's true. And then there was a slight pause in that. I did that for about 8 years, and then just kind of, I don't know if I burned out, because certainly when I graduated high school, it was 2 years straight on the road.
Okay.
You know, it's the cliche that you hear about young performers. You know, I didn't have any success really to speak of other than locally, but you know, you miss your childhood. You know, while you're over in New Brunswick or Newfoundland on tour for a week or a month or whatever at time, is when your friends are having their formative teenage years and shenanigans, and right?
Sure.
So I've been blessed, though, because my circle of friends from then, you know, from probably age 10 on, there are probably six or eight of us that still are close friends that stay in touch mostly on social media for me, because I live in Toronto and they live in PEI. But we were able to salvage good friendships out of all that. Anyways, I took a little break. I went to university for a year. I worked as a DJ at a club.
Okay.
I kind of did my own thing, sort of like Saturday afternoon jam session that I hosted. But then I went to Humber College here in Toronto to study music. I was accepted to that program, which was interesting. And did that for a year, won a scholarship.
What did you want to do with that? Did you know at that time?
Yeah, not sure, right? Because a lot of my schoolmates were younger than me, and their aspiration was to become a working / touring musician, and I had already done that for 8 years.
So fascinating.
I think for me, it was just like I knew how to play basic rock drumming, but this is more of a jazz program. Where would that lead me? So that was interesting for a bunch of reasons, and made some friends there, of course. But through that period of not playing in a band and going to school, I met my girlfriend, now my wife. And then after school, we had a child together and then moved on with our lives. So that's the first and only time I ever had a sort of a day job.
Okay.
I worked at a printing factory or like a printer for, I don't know, not that long. But then I was invited to move to Halifax by two friends of mine who played in a competing band. So when I was in the band Tequila, there was a band out of Halifax called Titan who were kind of the cock of the walk band. Like they were big time, and we were friendly competitors, shared an agency, et cetera. And I had moved on, they had moved on, and they decided, let's start something new and let's bring the kid over from PEI. Literally when our daughter was an infant, we moved from Charlottetown to Halifax. Doesn't seem like a lot now, like in hindsight, it's not that far away, but it is.
Yeah.
And then again, for another 8 years, I was on the road touring with this band, made a record.
Eight years is a long time.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially in that, I guess, time segment of life, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're kind of forming the path, essentially. Like when you're younger, obviously, you're definitely on a unique path. And like you said, most of your friends weren't doing that. But now you're in like where people are kind of establishing careers and whatnot. And you're touring. So was that Steve, did it feel clear that you wanted to be a musician and that was the path, or was there something else kind of in the background? Cause you did other things after, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I think you know, you do that, you aspire for success.
Yeah, of course.
Ironically or coincidentally, at the time we were working this band called The Trees in Halifax, we were sort of noticed by the people who worked for the major record companies who were based in Halifax and kind of had auditions with, for lack of a better term, Warner Records, where I later worked, and at A&M Records, which is where I had my first gig in the record business.
Okay.
Just like kind of like, I don't know, happenstance, when I can't think of the right word. But during that, I remember hearing about people who were had moderate success or good success as touring recording musicians who segued into more of an executive role. And what my initial thought was A&R. And so A&R, traditionally called artist and repertoire,
yeah,
is a role at a record company where you discover, sign, develop artists, right?
Yeah.
So I thought that would be a nice role as I got older, because I've walked the walk and I can talk the talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, am I jumping around here?
No, that's good.
One of the guys that I met in Halifax who sort of showed interest in us from A&M Records is a guy named Dave Porter. And he was the sales and promotion representative for A&M Records in Atlantic Canada. And I grew to know him, grew to like him, and was sort of intrigued by what a cool gig he had.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so again, kind of maybe just I hit the 7-year itch or whatever it is, but around the 8th year, I thought, okay, maybe it's time to make a change. It just so happened that this guy got promoted to Toronto. Therefore, his job became open. And And so I thought, this is someone telling me something, because I'd wanted to like segue into being at a record company. And I liked this guy and I was intrigued by his job. And there his job is open.
Mm. Do you remember at that? So how old would your daughter have been around that time?
She would have been 8.
8. Okay.
Yeah.
So literally basically exactly where I am right now. I mean, my son is 8. I'm the same age as your daughter, as we discovered not too recently.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of the conversation I would be having with my wife. Like I don't want to say it's a career pivot. I mean, cause it's still within the industry, but was it a big conversation that you had with Kelly, or it kind of fell?
I'll tell you the big conversation was when Kelly and I met shortly after I had stopped being in tequila, and we met sort of at university. We both went to UPEI at the same time, but weren't in classes together, but we worked at the same establishment. She was the hostess in the restaurant and I was the DJ in the club behind awesome. The restaurant.
Okay.
And so she didn't know me as who, she just kind of didn't know who I was really.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, she was just living in, she's from Summerside, PEI. I'm from Charlottetown. And she was living with a schoolmate of mine, one of my school girlfriends, like female friends. And they were going through the yearbook one time and said, who's that? And she said, that's, you don't know who that is, because in small town, kind of everybody would know who I was because I was the guy that played in a popular band.
Yeah, of course.
And she had no clue. So that was kind of funny, but also refreshing.
Yeah.
And then once we settled into a groove of having a baby and working, and then I had this offer to move to Halifax, my initial reaction was, there's no way I'm going to uproot my family with an 8-month-old child and move to a different town. But Kelly really kind of pushed for it. I probably warned her off it about 10 times. If you you didn't know me as a touring musician, you don't know what it's like being with a touring musician. You're gone for weeks at a time, right? Yeah. So you have a small child. But she was up for it, and she was really the one who convinced me to do it, which is interesting. And it wasn't easy for either of us, especially for her. But, you know, all's well that ends well.
Okay. So then the next move to Toronto,
So then the shift to stop being a musician and start working at the record company, because we were staying in Halifax, was easy for both of us, because then it's like, I'm going to be working from home. The travel would be very controllable because, you know, you basically here and there you would travel throughout Atlantic Canada because all four provinces were under my purview. So that was an easy transition.
Okay. That makes sense.
And then I just dove in to the deep end, not really knowing how the record industry worked and how radio worked and how record retail worked. And the part that was easy was, part of the job is that if an artist comes to town to do a concert or to do publicity or whichever, you have to squire them around and set up their interviews and take them around and wine and dine them. That part I could do very easily.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, though, just like I can, we haven't known each other that long, but one observation, at least from me, and what I feel from you every time we have a conversation, whether it's like this or virtual or in person, is there's this beautiful kind of calming energy to you. And calming and I think the other word that comes to mind is graceful. And I feel, so I can see, I can only imagine, I'm projecting here, of course, but as artists are rolling through, it's probably quite refreshing to be like, oh, Steve's going to be with you. And, you know, like with all the other craziness going on in their lives.
Yeah, I guess, although I know a lot of people and have known a lot of people over the years who have done this job, which is radio promotion, which is such a narrow description of what the job is, that are good at it, that didn't necessarily have a background as musicians. And for that matter, I've worked with a lot of people at high levels in this business who aren't musical people. Like my longtime friend and the guy who was my boss for 20 years at Warner, Steve Kane, he's a music fanatic. His knowledge of all styles of music and the history of music is astonishing. But he'll be the first one to tell you that he can't clap on time. He couldn't sing a note, couldn't strum a string.
Yeah.
But it that he just brings a different skill set to it.
Yeah.
Right. So I think there are lots of people who are good at that. I think maybe I came to it quicker being in a new job because I was able to talk musician, as it were.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm just curious. I mean, we could do a whole series on the next part of your life, because I mean that forms obviously a bunch of years and a ton of different stories and experiences. So I'll just ask a couple questions. I would just love to know if you reflect back, and I'm assuming you've probably done some reflection over the last few months of just having retired and now looking at your next chapter. What are some memories or stories that either just like you can't believe or just surprised you? Like you never in a million years would have thought like, wow, like that's, you know, here I am coming from PEI, was on the road for many years and I did this or did that or and I'm not just saying about name dropping. I just think of interesting experiences that you've had over the years.
Oh, wow. Like so many. Normally, if I were to pull out some of my great experiences and stories, they're very name droppy.
That's fine. That's fine.
They're very name droppy, but at the same time, maybe it's over a glass of wine with close friends. So let's pretend you and I are having a glass of wine.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's different levels. Like, you know, I've been blessed to work with some of the biggest artists in the world. You know, and when you go back to some of the artists I've worked with, and I'm a particular fan of singer-songwriters, and obviously I think Canada is like the hotbed of that for decades, for generations. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with, as you mentioned, Neil Young, Leonard Cohen, Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah, like, right? These are the legends.
Yeah. The first artist I worked with was Jan Arden. When I became a record company guy, the very first artist I worked with was Jan Arden.
And was that intimidating? Like, how did you feel in that moment?
I'm the first record company guy she worked with. We literally started at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah. So she was on tour. We were just releasing her first record. She was on tour opening for Moxie Fruvis.
Okay.
And she came through with, it was her and her bass player and her manager. Cause they were like probably not making any money. They had 20 minutes a night to do a few songs. And I had to take her around and set up interviews and I was so new to it. I was like, I don't know, what do we do? And Kelly said, well, why don't you invite her to the house for dinner?
Okay.
Now in hindsight, that's a bold move, or it's not the norm.
Yeah.
Right. But of course they came over and we had a lovely meal. Our dog bit her.
Come on.
Yeah. No. Our 7-pound poodle.
Welcome to the family.
Yeah. And, But yeah, it was very interesting because, like I said, we were both at the very beginnings of our career. Yeah. She's gone on to have, you know, Jan friggin' Art.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I only worked with her probably for about 5 years till I moved on to a different company. But if we see each other to this day, it's like time hasn't passed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is what must be interesting. And I feel like, you know, there's a whole bunch of different age categories, I'd say, of listeners on the show. But I'm curious again, like where you're at right now. Like there's got to be an element of when you look back, like you're coming up, like essentially you came up with Jan Arden and many others. But often, like what we see, you know, we see in the outward facing world, and I fall victim to this sometimes as well. But like you want that quick hit, that quick rise or attention, whatever it is, for example. But the more that I speak to people like yourself and study the greats and whatnot, I mean, it's really the people you don't see that, like they don't know that story of your dog, you know, having a little nip at Jan Arden and you inviting her over for dinner. You know, when you're both at the beginning of your career, they see that, oh yeah, Steve and Jan Arden are close or so forth. But there's often a lot of history there that people don't see.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I'm trying to draw a line between that, because, you know, when Jan started, no one knew who she was, and now she's a household name. But she did the work. Like, yeah, she worked hard.
Of course.
And that's always been very satisfying to me, is when you start working with an artist at the beginning of their career. And, you know, it's a funny business. There are better singers than some of the top artists in the world. There are better performers. There are better looking people. All the things that you think you need to have to be a successful pop star or rock star. A lot of it is hard work. Yeah. And it's been very, very satisfying for me to start working with an artist at the beginning of their career, where they're playing to 20 people in some club at 11:30 on a Tuesday night. And then you watch them grow over a period of months, years. It's just, it never gets old.
Yeah.
And also what doesn't get old is your disappointment for artists that do put in that work and for one reason or the other, don't hit the levels that they and others have, the expectations they put on themselves and others around them have put on themselves or on them. So, you know, the success rate in the music business is a really, really low.
Sure.
It's a low percentage point. But you try your best every time, because you just never know.
Well, and I think there's a lot of parallels to, there's most likely many listeners that are entrepreneurs on this show as well. Just knowing some of the backstory of the audience.
Okay.
And I think there are parallels there as well. Like, I mean, you can look in the numbers and the success rate of starting a business is quite low, but I think probably what you've experienced in the music world, I mean, you get luckier the more you work and the more people you speak with. And to your point, I think unfortunately sometimes it doesn't always pan out for everyone, but at least if you're trying, you know, you're increasing the odds, right, in that whole journey and being discovered or amplified and so forth.
Yeah. I'm going to dip back a little bit to what I talked about growing up and still having the same circle of friends. It wasn't just me who experienced the missing out, because several of my close friends were very, very successful hockey players.
Okay.
That ultimately played NHL, major junior hockey, U.S. college, Canadian college. So yeah, some of my friends at a high school move away to North Dakota for 4 years, or for, you know, coming home for the summers, of course. But
yeah.
But then I like to sort of explain to people when I'm asked about, you know, what it takes to make it in the music business, it's the complete opposite of, I think, professional sports. We'll stick to hockey just because that's what I know better and Canadian thing.
Yeah.
Is if you have a child who is playing hockey, minor hockey, there are some players are better than others. And almost immediately, there are people around, coaches, general managers, other parents that can identify, wow, this one kid is like really good. And almost from there until they make it to the NHL, if they do, they're on a path because they've been elevated to a higher level team with better coaching, better training. And then scouts start to see you. It's like a very, like it's very rare that someone just luckily gets a job on an NHL or an AHL team or gets drafted to a college. Usually you've had eyes on you for many, many years as you've developed, trained, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
In music, it's a complete lottery. You know, famously, Justin Bieber was discovered singing on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that the guy discovered him. Scooter was a guy that had the right skill set, desire, connections, et cetera, to help put Justin Bieber front and center. But you know, he wasn't the only person that was posting videos on YouTube at that time.
Well, yeah, it's funny. You mentioned that, and I think you were present on the second day we were filming this pilot with Mia Martina. And I think of her story as well, like someone from the East Coast and moves to Ottawa. And I mean, obviously very talented singer, but it just kind of this one fluke moment of working with her. I think she was an assistant of some sort for a label. And they were looking for, they said, well, I can, she said something to effect, well, I can sing too. And next thing you know, she belts out, you know, a song and the rest is history. But like, you can't plan for that. You know, that's not being put on the team.
No. Yeah.
So what would be your advice then to, I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but for artists or I guess really anyone in the creative field in some capacity that, you know, have the passion, have some talent, they're working towards it. Like, how do you stay motivated to keep going?
You know, I saw this yesterday on, probably Instagram, the Juno Awards
are
coming up in Halifax at the end of March, March 24th, I think. And very pleased that a longtime friend of mine, a guy named Chip Sutherland, who's a Halifax-based entertainment lawyer. He co-wrote the book for Canadian music industry. Law mostly. But I knew him. He was a musician. He was a drummer in a band in Halifax. Anyways, they've been posting, they posted part one, I think part two is out today, of just him giving snippets of advice. And one of them was, maybe once upon a time, I'm paraphrasing, cause he's a very successful lawyer and I'm not, so he's better with his words. You know, a record company would, through their means, by receiving a demo tape or a recommendation, would catch on to a band. That's what happened to the band that I was in. Nothing came of it, but it was sort of like,
sure,
someone found us through that. But his advice was more about what record companies or publishing companies or agents, managers, or what they're looking for is, have you built it yourself? And I spoke last week with the son of a friend of mine who's got a band and they've written some songs and they're recording an EP. And some of the things that they're doing without any advice, just on their own or figuring it out, they've been doing their life. That started out in Guelph. They all went to college together. They would promote their own shows or they would join forces with another band and promote a show where they would basically spread the word, try to sell some tickets, get the venue to agree to take them in.
Yeah.
And they got this following. And then after school, some of them are living in Toronto and they're doing it from scratch again in a much bigger market without the support of their schoolmates. But they're like actually selling tickets to shows, right?
Yeah.
And so the next time they do a gig, I'm going to call a couple of my friends who are agents and going to say, hey, these guys are baby steps, but
they put in the work.
They sold out the Alma Combo or they sold out
the
Horseshoe. sold out might be hyperbole on my part, but that's in my DNA, being a record promoter. And then their next step, and I, as soon as I started talking about it, he said, we're already on it. Social media. We need to have a better presence on TikTok, on Instagram, et cetera. So they get it. And yeah. I think that's, if you're an aspiring artist, you have to get yourself out there. And now the asterisk attached to that is there's always a flash in the pan. There's always a fad. And TikTok has been having an extended moment of that where suddenly someone will blow up on TikTok. And I think major and indie record companies, it's hard to resist that someone go, oh my God, this guy posted a song and it got 10 million views or whatever. But also I've seen a lot of people that were sort of like, drop everything. This is the next big thing. And there's no there.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to the band that's been playing together for 3 years and promoting their own gigs and writing songs over and over again. When they have that moment, they've already put in their whatever, 10,000 hours. It's still something that we quote, the long tail and all of that.
But they're in it for the journey. I feel there's so many, I wouldn't say like this isn't a podcast that is specifically focused on music or musicians. So this isn't a topic that I always cover. There's a lot of business kind of stories and backgrounds, which there's so many parallels. Like there's no, you hear I feel this on my own side, on the mental fitness side. I mean, sure, as you grow and whatnot, there's more people that can come and help on the team. But in the early days, you know, you're doing everything and you're putting in the work. So I feel like what is coming to mind is like, you kind of have to, you better enjoy the journey of that. I know it sounds cliche. Everyone says this, but like that's where the magic is. And, and the other thing, sure, they may happen, but if you can really just keep going and be around people that you like, you know, enjoy it.
If you're an aspiring musician or artist of some sort, I'll stick to music because that's what I know.
Yeah.
You're an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Right. And so much so that even as you begin to gather success and monies are being made, you might be the last one to get any money. Right.
Yeah.
Because if you have a manager, they take a cut. If you have an agent, they take a cut. The record company model has changed a lot over the years, but basically that's a record company in many ways is a bank.
Yeah.
We believe in you. We're going to lend you some money.
Sure.
And then you'll pay us back by streaming and whatever else. And, you know, it's called the music business for a reason.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Now, the difference being is that you know, if a record company invests money in an artist, it's a forgivable loan, right? Okay. So if at the end of the day, if we work together for 5 years and we've invested however many thousands of dollars in you and it doesn't pan out, you don't owe that. You walk away from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah, that's another show.
there have been some shady things happen at every level of the music industry. Trust me. Yeah.
Yeah. Too funny. So as I'm curious now, because you're in a really exciting phase of life and kind of this next chapter. You've had this beautiful career in music and have met a lot of great people. There's this, like I said earlier, there's this kind of through line and vibe that I feel that people love being around you, myself included. And we're going to be at your birthday party in a few days. I can't wait. Like with all of that and kind of packaging it together, what are some of the questions you've been asking yourself now that you're kind of reflecting on the years that have passed and you're looking towards, well, what's next, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, this is, I normally wouldn't be as forthcoming. And I know it's not just you and I talking or people are listening to us, presumably.
Just you and I, Steve. Don't worry about it.
No, because so on and off 16 or 17 years as a musician and then 30 years working in the record business and then retirement. And I mean, it's at first it was the best summer off since I was 13 or 14 years old.
I love it.
Yeah. And then my wife traveled a bit, and then, but I just felt like, and it was everybody who had gone through it, had said, you're going to start getting itchy and restless and all of that. And it's true. What I struggled with was, if there's a next chapter, the first chapter was as a musician, the second chapter was as a record person. So music is the third chapter, staying in music. Mm-hmm. And not that that's the easy path, but, you know, it's what I know best at some, any level of the music business. But one of the things that's been encouraging, that's been interesting to me, is talking to you and some of your cohorts about things that aren't music.
Yeah.
They're about mental fitness. They're about different sort of exciting. I'm just sort of being careful about what I say, because there's obviously, it's multifaceted.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's intriguing to me. And then certain things have just sort of come to me through nothing I could have planned, where, you know, a client of my, one of Kelly's best clients, who's become a social friend of ours, his family, introduced me to a close friend of his who's in the construction business, but whose son has a great interest in doing some things in the music space, particularly in the not-for-profit, community-based, give-back sort of world, which I love. I love that, everything about that. And so I've been sort of like hanging with these guys and talking to them and trying to connect them with people. And what I love about it is they lead with giving back, right? And even when I say to them, yes, there's opportunities with this organization, with this charity, with this community, that you could really help out a lot by giving back. But at the same time, you could make some money off this with people who would be willing to pay for the facilities or the expertise that you could bring to the table.
Yeah.
And they're almost, let's not talk about that just yet. They're really, how can we give back? And so that's been really rewarding. So it's kind of in music, but it's also more so in the not-for-profit space or the charity space.
Well, it's just the helping, which,
yeah.
If I think of the research I've done in past conversations we've had, I mean, the through line, I think, for at least the last 30 years or so for you has been helping others in some capacity.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it comes with the job, right? So it's my job to help artists with their careers, right? And it sounds like it's cold that it's my job. I could think of a lot worse jobs.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's very rewarding, and it's in music, and it's, you're helping artists achieve their, or try to achieve their goals. But a lot of it from early on turned to charity. So through the industry, we were involved with a number of different charities. One that was really near and dear to my heart was is Music Therapy, the Canadian Music Therapy Trust Fund specifically, which was run for a long time by an amazing woman called Fran Herman. May she rest in peace. And she was just a force of nature. This is one of the most impressive people I've ever met at any level of anything in my life. We became good friends. I thought I might, I have a guitar here that she decorated.
Oh, amazing.
And gave me. Well, I made a donation. She gave it to me. It's not at my fingertips though, but
sure.
It's one of my most treasured possessions. And so, you know, we tried to figure out a way, like our companies, the contemporaries of mine that worked at the other major record companies, those parent companies would, you know, buy tables at a gala dinner that would cost thousands of dollars. And we thought, how do we make this more grassroots? So we started an event called Weasel Palooza. People who work in my industry, or specifically my job, are often referred to as weasels. I don't know if David Letterman coined the phrase, but he certainly popularized it. And so our thing was, let's not be one of the six or eight people that get invited to this big gala dinner. Let's throw a party for $20 a person and invite everybody.
Yeah.
And so, and that became very successful for a long time, kind of ran its course after a while. And then as through the Juno Awards, KARS, Canadian Association of Recording Arts and Sciences, has a branch called Music Counts, which raises money to put instruments in schools. Mm. So that was near and dear to my heart for a couple of reasons. And I worked voluntarily as a marketing person at the Junos for a number of years. So I loved that stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess all the way around to my friend, the developer, seeking my help as advice, as recommended by a friend to give back, to do a charity thing. I didn't go looking for it. Found me. So that's rewarding.
So what, I guess when you're in moments of quiet, when your mind is most still, what are some of the questions that you're reflecting on? Like, how are you, I know a lot of this stuff is finding you, but you know, there is a certain, and this could be fun, this doesn't have to be scary. you know, there's an element of designing the next chapter, right? So I'm just curious, because there are a lot of people that I know that, my father-in-law, I put in this category just recently, retired as well, and is like really trying to think. Like, he's not done. There's someone that I've interviewed a few times on the show called, his name is Chip Conley, and he's in the book, which I know you have, and he refers to the Steve Cody's of the world and my father-in-law and one as modern elders.
Modern elders, wow.
And I love it because it's, at least in North America, we have a weird, it's not like other cultures where our elders, like there's a lot of wisdom that is transferred and so forth. And for whatever reason in North America, we don't do that much of that, which is a huge reason why I'm excited that you're on the show to share some of that wisdom over your years. But then also his point is that people that are coming off of great careers or long careers that are in their 60s are far from done. You know, there is another act, or they want to do other things and whatnot. So I'm curious for people that are there, but even in other decades of their lives where you get to these moments of making changes, if there are any questions or things you've been thinking about that have been helpful in trying to, you know, understand like what feels right.
Right. So I think the unease, the uncertainty comes from, knock on wood, a lot of the great things in my life have come to me. Mm. I was asked to audition for a band. I got the gig and did that.
Yeah.
And then I opted out. I wanted to go to school. I got accepted. I got a scholarship.
Yeah.
The ultimate, met Kelly, and then came Lauren. Like, you know.
Yeah.
The greatest mother-daughter combination in history. All due respect to my own mother and everyone else.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kind of having an idea that maybe I want to work at a record company, and the guy that I was closest to in that business left, that I ended up getting his job. And then making enough of an impression that they said, why don't you come up to Toronto and try it here? Then where I had to sort of step outside of my personality a bit was, I changed jobs 3 times in the record business. The first was sort of a timing thing, which I won't get into here, but I had been offered a job at a different company for a second time. And at the time I had that second offer on the table is when there were some changes at the company that I had been with for 5 years. And it was sort of like, someone's trying to tell me something here. Let's go over here to a bigger company with a bigger job. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of years later, I was approached again to move up into a national role with an exciting company that was forming. So I could be on the ground floor of the Canadian division of a globally successful company. And then ultimately it was being asked to join Warner, which is where I spent, like I said, 21 of my 30 years in the business.
Yeah.
So certainly the first time, it was really gut-wrenching to say to these people who had hired me, promoted me, I'm leaving.
Sure.
I realized later, not to be jaded about it, but it happens in every industry all the time.
Yeah.
But back to the entrepreneurial bit of it, the other thing I'm struggling with is I've never really been an entrepreneur. I know I said that if you're an artist, you're an entrepreneur by nature. And I guess that's true. But I maybe I compartmentalized it by being, I'm just the drummer in the band that's the artist that's aspiring to things.
Sure.
It's not all on me. But yeah, so suddenly you find yourself in your early 60s and you're retired. And you're thinking, hey, I want to do something else. But what is there for someone like me? Right?
Yeah.
So you have those second thoughts.
But is
doubts.
There... Oh, I've got a few questions. I mean, two questions. One, do you have to buck the trend? I mean, it's worked quite well for you. And in a way, you know, like kind of the same advice that you give up and coming artists of just have the conversations, put in the work and kind of do what you're doing and things will materialize. And you've seen that obviously play out.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, with that, I guess that's the first question. And the one that connects the two, or the second one, I should say, would be, is there anything that you found helpful or that you're seeking to help let go of some of those, you know, almost like limiting beliefs in a way, or just the narratives that we all have for a whole bunch of different reasons and circumstances?
Yeah, I think you get stuck in my head or maybe other people's heads that, you know, if you do this for a long time and then you retire, then you decide that you want to unretire and you go back into the same field that you're in, other than it's from an independent side rather than working for a record company. You know, are you a one-trick pony and things like that? But a lot of the people that I really respect that I worked with over the years and certainly my wife, it's just like, you've done it for a long time. You're pretty good at it. And if people are asking you to do that for them, then isn't that the same? You're helping people.
Yeah.
Right. Cause yeah. There's a lot of artists. There are a lot of artists out there that aren't signed to a major record company. And there are some independent record companies that don't have the resources to compete. That's sort of where I'm going to dip my toe out of retirement. But at the same time, because I'll be working for myself,
yeah,
I can set my own agenda, is when I can start thinking about, okay, what else, what other areas can I apply my skill set to,
mm-hmm.
Right? I said that what I did for all those years, radio promotion, it's a very narrow definition. The job of my team was to represent the artists who were signed to the record company, getting their songs played on the radio, right? But alongside that is you're helping with the radio stations to do fun things, promotions, ticket giveaways, meet and greets, things like that with the artists. You're helping the artists and the publicity team set up interview schedules, and you're taking those artists around to do their interviews at different media outlets. You know, there's a lot of things happening there, and your interaction with the aforementioned A&R team, mm-hmm. and the marketing team. So it's like you're really touching a lot of aspects of the business, working closely with concert promoters, booking agents, artist managers. You know, you glean a lot of information out of that for doing it all those years. And then when you're at my age and you've lived in Toronto for 30 years and you've worked in an industry that's kind of exciting and out there, and your wife is an executive in the alcohol beverage business, you make a lot of contacts in a lot of different areas, from business to politics, et cetera, et cetera. So I to answer your question, I think it will be rewarding to go back into doing what I was doing, but on an independent level, and then have the flexibility, the bandwidth to explore other outlets outside of music.
Yeah. Well, and it also sounds like you've done some, you know, just natural reflection as well around just, you know, the things that you like and the things that give you energy versus, you know, suck energy from you or deplete you. There's an opportunity, I think, at this point too, to just be like, nah, I've been over here before. I don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's so you know, in a way, I mean, I feel like, I mean, I'm excited for you. I feel like it's a beautiful, it's a beautiful place to be. And thinking of even how we met with the project that we're working on, it's very much that scenario you described is, you know, I was thinking of this and that it's morphed over time, but then a mutual connections, well, we need to talk to Steve, you know, and there, like, you weren't coming out looking for this project.
Right.
Right. But it's, you know, there's elements obviously that really align with helping a bunch of people is and it, there's music linked to that obviously and so forth. So I don't know. I feel there would probably be a lot of those, and it's going to come to the point where, well, I only have so much time essentially, and you get to be a little bit choosy on the projects.
You know, in one of the meetings I had with the project I mentioned earlier, sweet. I introduced the right people, I thought, and they obviously thought too. And then one of my friends who I had brought into the meeting, into the situation, said, oh, this guy, he's the great connector. And we were joking about it later. I said something like, hey, if only a guy could get paid for that. He goes, that's not what it's about. Just, you're good at doing that, and then things will come to you. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So it sounds a little, I don't know, philosophical or...
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like a big through line over the last 30 plus years is this element of, I want to say, like, doing the right thing. I mean, but your personality is that connector, but with the angle of, like, truly, authentically, really helping others on the other side. And, you know, the least the years that you've spent in the industry, I mean, you're being paid obviously to do that. And I don't see why that would be any different, you know, moving forward. Right.
Yeah. I think it's as you described it, that's a little bit tail wagging the dog. I just think whether it's because of my upbringing or within my own family or being an East Coast guy, you know, I just think that it comes naturally to me.
Sure.
And so that's, it was more so that then I could apply that personality trait to my professional career.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, lots of people are good at that I've worked with over the years.
What excites you most about the years to come or where you're at right now?
It's funny. It's like there's a little bit of fear of the unknown, but excited about what's to come.
Yeah.
Right. So I try and keep that balance in my head.
I think that's healthy.
Yeah.
If you're, I'm just curious if your daughter Lauren was with us right now on this call, this interview, what would she say she wants for you in the next chapter?
Boy, that's a tough one. I mean, she would, whatever makes me happy is what she'd probably say.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't think it has to be any more complicated than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exciting.
She's a wicked smart girl.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, I feel like there's probably a few more conversations to come, especially as things develop and just knowing some of the stuff that we're working on as well. I mean, just love to have some like behind the scenes chats as all this stuff develops with us and everyone involved.
Uh-huh.
But in the meantime, and just in this conversation with you and having got to know you a little bit better over the last few months, I feel really honored to be able to hold space for a conversation like this with you at this point in your life. And I really don't take it lightly because I mean what I said in the sense that we don't speak with modern elders, let's say, as much as we should to, you know, you've lived life. You've got a lot of beautiful experiences and there's a lot more to come, but there's a lot there that I think we can learn and respect and appreciate. And for me personally, I feel so honored to be able to have some time like that. So thank you.
I really appreciate you saying that. And I have to say that, you know, from the beginning of when we started to get to know each other better, just that your energy is so great. So I did not really, I probably said to you, I don't know, I've never done a podcast before. I'm a behind the scenes guy, all of that sort of stuff. But I knew that I could jump on here, other than being a little worried with the technical stuff.
Sure.
And be comfortable, and the time flew by, and I was very much at ease. And so right back at you.
Well, I appreciate that. That lands in the heart. Well, here's to the future ahead and the ripple effect of continuing just to do beautiful work in this world, Steve, where, you know, it's one project, conversation, or connection at a time. But as you know from your a lot of the work you do with artists, I mean, that's exponential. I mean, you know, with a lot of people you've worked with, just the songs in itself have saved lives and motivated people and shifted minds. And that's, I think, something to celebrate.
Yeah.
And I look forward to seeing what's next.
Not to invite myself back, but that's a whole other conversation about the power of music. And I mentioned music therapy before.
Yeah.
I'd love to dive into the specifics of that, but also just in general, like, so many stories I have of music rescuing people, saving people, soothing people, lifting people.
Yeah. Well, that invite is on the way, Steve. I feel like it fits well. So, well, thank you so much. To be continued. And yeah, just keep thriving out there, brother. Be well.
Appreciate it.